He looks over the size of the crowd and is able to determine with a good rough guess. And now I'll be honest with you. When I first read that, I kind of thought what Philip was doing there is, have you ever been given, needed some work done in your house or whatever, and you've received the I don't want to do it price? Okay? You know, Shannon and I had some work done. We figured it was going to cost a couple $1,000s on our, on the kitchen. And they came in and said, it's going to be about $7,000. Meaning, if you're stupid enough to pay the $7,000, then we'll come from Des Moines to do this. But really, we don't want this job at all. And so that's kind of how I first approached this, thinking that this is what Philip was doing here. Setting up this monumental, huge figure that can just cause Jesus to say, yeah, you're probably right. But as I started doing the math, because I'm kind of a math geek, I started looking at this saying, you know what? His guess was probably pretty close. Philip, if he would have been a co-worker of mine, we would have had some problems. Why? Because he adds to the question and then answers his question rather than the one that Jesus asked. Jesus asked, where can we get the food? And Philip gave him a price. Philip doesn't answer the question. This is kind of the same thing as saying, asking the question, how can we do this? We've got this need here in the church. How can we go about accomplishing this? And then having a bunch of people respond, well, I'll tell you what we can't do. Ask Shannon how much that bothers me when I ask, how can we accomplish this? Well, these are a bunch of things that we sure can't do. Do it. I didn't ask that. I asked, how can we do it? And that's what Philip is doing here. Again, the money estimate that Philip gives, on the surface, it looks like he's saying, we can't do this price. But based upon closer examination, he's really not that far off again. So a single denarii, he says 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them. A single denarii was about a day's wage in this time. So 200 days worth of wages is what he's saying. It's not enough. If you had 200 days worth of wages, it's not going to cut it. So recent census numbers, to put that into today's perspective, in Newton, Iowa, recent census numbers say that the average household income in Newton, Iowa is about $45,000 to $50,000. Okay? So 200 days worth of today's wage is about 55% of that, or about $25,000 to $27,000. Okay, that's a lot of money. But considering that there was about 12,000 to 15,000 people, if I go up to McDonald's and order from the dollar menu a cheeseburger and a drink for all of these people, I don't have enough money to pay for it. So he's pretty close. 200 days worth of wages is not going to cut this. Because he says, even for just them to have a little bit. Now, I don't know how many eat at McDonald's, but I can tell you for myself, I can go there and slam 3,000 calories and still come home and want a bowl of cereal. It's not going to fill you up. And that's what Philip is saying here. He says, this is not going to be enough money to even give them just a little tiny bit of food for everyone. So knowing what we know then about Philip here, if we're to follow his train of thought, then we're forced to interpret this text as Philip basically saying, you're asking the impossible, Jesus. Because in reality, a bunch of fishermen sojourning are not going to have anywhere near this kind of money. I mean, how many here walk around with 25 grand in your pocket? No one's going to raise your okay, this,
I felt like I had to.
This guy right here, meet him out in the parking lot. We've got some needs in the church. We can do So no one's going to carry around that kind of cash with them, all right? Same with these, and fishermen to boot. I mean, they're scraping by to begin with, and now they're talking about this kind of money? No, they don't have it. So Philip is saying, Jesus, what you're asking for, it can't be done by us. And he's given this answer to now elevate the situation to a point that he's hoping Jesus will just simply respond, yeah, you're probably right. Let's just send them away for the night, fend for themselves, they'll come back in the morning. We've been through a lot as a church family over the recent few years. Many of us, we've got questions. We've got questions that we're wanting basic answers to. Many of us wonder, how on earth will we ever move forward with certain things? How will we do this or how will we do that? We can't do this program for the kids because we don't have the people. We can't do big music things because we just don't have the sound system to support everything like that. Man, there's just so much to do. We can't do small groups because, you know, let's look around. Let's face it, we're a small group the way it is. And so when questions get asked, how on earth can we fill in the blank? There are a lot of us here that are like Philip. We hear the question, it's asked honestly, and we analyze the situation. We present them the most logically formulated answer we can, but we give an answer a lot like Philip does, in such a way that if it were to really happen that way, if we're all walking around with 25 grand in our pocket that we don't know what to do with, think of how much we can do. Okay? That's the way that we think sometimes about some of the questions we have here. We ask it in a way that, man, if we just had this, fill in the blank, then we could easily pull this off. How can we do big music stuff? Well, if we had at least $5,000, we could easily upgrade the sound system. How can we reach the south end of Newton? Well, if we had at least 15 willing people, we could easily do that. How will we ever be able to pay a full-time salary? Well, if we had X more in monthly offerings, then we could easily pay this. Are you like Philip? You're quick to give answers that don't require much faith in God at all. We give an answer and say, man, if we had this, then it's easy. Well, Jesus isn't looking for easy all the time, is he? He's looking for faith. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm like Philip. I'm like Philip about 99% of the time. And that's why this passage has really just been tugging on my heart, because I really feel God is challenging me to say, be more like this other guy. And we're going to talk about him in just a second here. But I'm like Philip most of the time. It's just how my mind is wired. I analyze. Ask Shannon. Especially with finances. I'm a numbers geek. I build these elaborate spreadsheets at work in an effort to be able to tell a story with numbers. I look for the most reasonable, logical answer that corresponds with what I know to be true, and that's my answer. And as a result, sadly, my faith is weak many times. So are you like Philip? Well, there's another person in this story that's completely different from Philip. His name is Andrew. Turn back to chapter 1 with me, where we see one of the first encounters with Andrew and Jesus. John 1 and verse 35 says, again, the next day, John was standing with two of his disciples, and he looked at Jesus as he walked and said, behold, the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. And Jesus turned and saw them following and said to them, what do you seek? And they said to him, Rabbi, which is translated teacher, where are you staying? And he said to them, come, and you will see. So they came and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day. For it was about the 10th hour. Now one of those that heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. And he found first his brother Simon and said, we have found the Messiah, which is translated Christ. So Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, Andrew was one that upon hearing John the Baptist preach and seeing Jesus for the first time, runs to his brother and proclaims, we have found the Messiah. Andrew possessed this childlike faith. MacArthur says this about Andrew. He says, of all the disciples in the inner circle, Andrew appears the least contentious and the most thoughtful. He saw the value of individual people. He saw the value of insignificant gifts. And he saw the value of inconspicuous service. And in our text this morning, we see Andrew's response. It says in verses 8 and 9, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's this lad who's got 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are these for so many people? So picture, again, keep this all in the setting, if you will. Andrew, who upon hearing Philip's response and how much money it was going to take to buy the food and how much food was going to be needed to feed these people, what does he do? He brings this boy to Jesus with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Are you kidding me? You just heard what Philip had to say, Andrew. I mean, the five barley loaves, that's not even good bread to begin with. It was made from the cheapest grain you could buy for bread making. And now keep in mind again that a lot of us are like Philip. Being like Philip, you're analyzing, then you say what you just said. What are you thinking at this very moment of Andrew's comments? What? Did you not just hear what I said? Andrew, did you not just hear me say what this was going to take? Is this some kind of joke? But the faith of Andrew says, I'm not sure what good it's going to do, but there's this boy with some food. But you know the story well. I know you do. We've grown up reading this. We've watched it play out on the flannel graph of our Sunday school classes growing up. And in verses 10 through 13, we see what occurs here, and we see how this plays out. Jesus says, have the people sit down. And there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number, about 5,000. Jesus then took the loaves, and having given thanks, he distributed to those who were seated. Likewise also of the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost. So they gathered them up, filled 12 baskets with fragments, with the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Remember what Philip said? It's going to take at least 200 days worth of wages, and what would the people still experience? Still be hungry. Okay? But verse 11 says that when the food was being distributed, people had as much as they wanted. Verse 12 tells us that they were filled. Verse 13 says that so much food to go around that 12 baskets were filled with the leftovers. Truly, a miracle took place here. So what does that mean for us here at Cornerstone? How on earth can we do some of the things that need to be done? So one of my challenges to you this morning is first, figure out who you are, each of you, individually. You each need to figure out who you are. And when you start doing that, it puts us on a path of really knowing who we collectively are. Are you like Philip? Are you logical, trying to figure things out with what you have? That's okay. I don't want you to take my depiction of Philip as a negative thing. It's not. Okay? It's not a bad thing that if this is who you resemble. Or you like Andrew. You don't know how things are going to work out. But by God's grace, you have faith in the one who can still make things happen. Who do you most resemble? Which personality is like yours? Here's some news. We need both. Right? Because we can't forget that Jesus called both of them. He called both Philip and Andrew. And in this text, we don't see Philip complaining. We don't see him being rebuked for his comments. Therefore, we need people just like Philip to help keep us grounded at times. We can't forget Jesus' other words in Luke chapter 14, where he says, for which of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observed it will begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish it. So we need Philips around us. We need those people that can come along and analyze things and say, let's think about this a little bit here. But once we realize what it will take, it makes what Jesus is about to do all the more amazing. Okay, so sometimes we need the Philips around to keep us level set. Say, yeah, you're right. I don't know how that's going to work. But then we need some Andrews. We desperately need some Andrews to help point our faith and eyes upward. Because if we have the Philips that level set for us, and now all of a sudden we're saying, yes. Okay, but I think God can do this. And then when God does do it, look how much more amazing that looks. So we need some Philips around. But we also need people, again, that help point our eyes upward every now and then, just to remind us what God is capable of doing. There's a beautiful thing to me about being a part of church of, can I say, experienced believers? Will I get myself in trouble if I say it that way? I hope not. Folks older than me, I'll put it that way. You have got stories to tell. Okay? You've lived some life events where you have seen God's grace occur over and over and over again in your life. You need to tell your stories. Okay? God's not done yet with you. You've got some instances that you can share with us. You know what? There was this time in my life when I was struggling with this, and I said, you know what, God's, I'm just going to have faith in God, and this is what happened. People like me, the younger crowd, I'll be 46 this year, we need to listen to the stories, do we not? We need to listen to them and not think that we are so arrogant that we have it all figured out ourselves. We need to tap into the knowledge that they have and the wisdom that they have. But let's not forget about another character in this story. We've got Philip, right? We've got Andrew. There is another character that we gloss over here pretty quickly in verses 8 and 9. Again, when Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, says to him, there's this lad here. We don't really know the whole backstory. Here's this boy woke up that morning, whether with his parents or by himself, not really certain. We just know that he's packing a lunch. Jesus and the disciples sit down, begin to discuss food. Maybe this boy's hanging out with Andrew the whole time and offers to share his food with Andrew. I don't know. We can only imagine, though, the look of bewilderment on the boy's face when the question comes up about how are we going to feed these people? And Andrew says, there's this boy. Like, what? I don't have that much. I don't have much to offer here. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but it's yours if you want it. So maybe you're Philip. You're logical. You're well-reasoned, ready to keep us all grounded. Maybe you're Andrew. You're full of faith. I don't know how, but I trust God to do what he said he would do. Andrew saw the facts. If there was anyone in history, you could look at Andrew and say, he had no good reason to believe otherwise from what Philip had said. Philip said this is the amount of money and food this is going to take. Philip's pretty sharp with this stuff. I think I'm going to go with what he says. He had no good reason to think anything different, but he exercised a faith that many of us lack. Maybe you're like Philip, and everything in the world, all the facts, all the figures, the statistics are screaming to you, we can't do this. But this is kind of where I have fallen a lot lately, is I am, like I said, 99% of the time I'm Philip. But God has been tugging at my heart saying, let's try this. And I keep going, no, this isn't, that's not going to work. Have you seen these numbers? It doesn't add up. And God keeps saying, let's try this. It's not going to work, God. I how many times I can look at this, the numbers just don't change. And God says, let's try this. And this is where I've been just buried in John 6 a lot lately, saying, God, help me to be more like Andrew. Help me to find areas in my life that I need to exercise more of Andrew's faith. So Philip and Andrew, but I think all of us, regardless of who we fall in, Philip or Andrew, I think all of us have a little bit of this little boy in us. You're carrying around certain abilities that no one knows anything about. And you don't think anything of it because you just don't think what you've got is that much to offer. Because let's face it, what on earth is God going to do with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish when there's so many needs around here? What good's a little piece of string? What can God do with this? I got news flash for you. Look at verse 11 again with me. Verse 11 there where it says, Jesus then took the loaves, and having given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. Likewise also the fish, as much as they wanted. Do you see who distributed the food? Do you see who the multiplier is? We're not called to be the multipliers of what we've got. We are simply called to bring what we have to the one who's capable of doing the multiplying. Let me say that just one more time. We're not called to be the multipliers of what we have. We are simply called to bring what we have to the one who is capable of doing the multiplying. Don't let your bread get moldy. That's where the sermon title comes into play. You're walking around with bread, danger of it getting moldy, don't let that happen. Imagine what your talents could look like. You bring your talents to God and He uses them, and just watch what He's capable of doing with a few loaves of bread and a couple fish. Are you a Philip and you've convinced yourself that what you have just isn't good enough? You've thrown out this big grand scheme of things and said, God, even if we had this, it's not enough. Or are you more like Andrew? God, you know what? Philip's probably right, but here's a little bit. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but it's yours. You can use it. Imagine what that would look like. I'll give you an example of what I've seen that look like here at Cornerstone. The last church cleanup day that we had, I remember my friend Betty walking in to church that morning, and I meet her at the door, and she says, I'm here to clean the bathrooms. She says, this is what I'm good at, so just show me where the bathrooms are, and I'll clean them. And I think my response to her was, well, Betty, I'm pretty sure no one's going to fight you for that job. So she did it, okay? But it reminded me that day, and as I was studying this, reflecting on that moment, it reminded me that having gifts sometimes might not always be public-facing for all to see. But what matters is that you just let God take your gifts, say, this is what I'm good at. What are you going to do with it? And you let Him do the multiplying. Okay, so how on earth does cleaning bathrooms get multiplied? It's because of younger folks like me that watch Betty and other people do tasks like that around the church. That day I saw Betty bring her bread and fish, and God used it to multiply it in my life. And I was like, I start rethinking about, man, what do I have? What do I have that I'm holding on to that I think is nothing? That I can say, use it. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know what it looks like in the future, but just use it. Imagine what that would look like. Look at verse 14 as we conclude here. Verse 14, we end this section of chapter 6. Therefore, so everything that we had just seen happen, imagine those that are closest to Jesus at that moment. He says, therefore, when the people saw the sign which He had performed, they said, this is truly the prophet who has come into the world. The people were amazed at what? At what you do? At what the people had done? No. Were they amazed at Philip's mind and his ability to think quick on his feet, to reason quickly through a situation? Were they amazed at his ability to look at a facts and figure of an income statement and say, nope, this doesn't add up, we can't do this? No. Were they even amazed at Andrew's faith? Mm-mm. Were they amazed at the boy that brought the food? No. No, it says that they were amazed at what God had done. And you'll be amazed at what God will do too. Once you figure out the thing that you once thought was so small and insignificant, and when you simply are just amazed at what God is doing with it, then and only then do you start to realize what it means to live in obedience with other passages like 1 Corinthians 10:31 that says, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, big, small, doesn't matter. Whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So are you a Philip this morning? Are you an Andrew? Are you the boy? We need all three. The razor blade is sharp, but it cannot cut a tree. The axe is strong, but it cannot cut the hair. Everyone is important according to his or her own unique purpose. Never look down on anyone unless you're admiring their shoes. Father, thank you for the opportunity just to study your word. Lord, I think of what it's meant to me, and I have challenged myself to just think and reflect on things that, boy, what do I have that I am not using that I should be? And I trust that there are some here. I know there are people here, Lord, that they're holding on to something that they don't think it's worth anything. It's insignificant. But Lord, as we have seen, little is much when you are in it, Lord. Father, I pray you be with us the remainder of this day. Again, that you would just continue to just be pleased with what we are doing. We'll just ask these things now in your Son's name. Amen.